Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The Sharks lose just what can only be called a heartbreaker in the first overtime by William Karlsson, a goal that beats Martin Jones on the stick side, bar down. The Sharks fail to capitalize on really on just on a great pushback in that third period by Tomas Hertl, a great individual effort there, and the Sharks go down in the series 2-1. They lose the game 4-3. If you want to be a part of the show, I've got to do this kind of the old school way, but if you want to be a part of the show, please use the hashtag TealTownUSA. Follow us on Twitter at TealTownUSA. You can also hit us up on the Facebook, Twitter machine. You've got Instagram, SoundCloud, and of course, YouTube chat, which is where we always take a look at your guys' questions, and we're always on Twitter as well. I am joined by Mr. Alex Martinet. Alex, how are you doing this evening?
Good. I mean, the Sharks' loss is not the best thing, but I thought it was a great game, the great third period. Great bounce back from a second period that was really disappointing, which we'll get into, but yeah, decent.
Yeah. And then I'm also joined by Gentry Alexander. Gentry, how are you doing this evening? I mean, besides the fact that the Sharks lost tonight, initial takes.
I'm going to save that for later on, because I have quite a bit to say about this catastrophe of a fucking game. So yeah, I'll save it for later.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean,
hot takes.
I don't even think it's hot takes at this point, to be quite honest. I think it's just a lot of raw emotion. I think we can break down this game in several facets, and we will. I think that there's a lot of angles to cover on this game tonight. It was kind of the tale of you know, three or four different games. And really, I mean, it was just what we thought that the series was going to be. Like, it was going to be a nail biter. It was going to be just a back and forth series. And here we go again. I mean, the Knights come out and punch, the Sharks counterpunch, the Knights counterpunch. It's just now up to the Sharks to re-counter and really take it to Vegas. I mean, I think first off, in that first period, the Sharks just utterly obliterated Vegas and did not show anything for it. And if you want to point to something that really just, you know, did this the Sharks in was the lack of conversions on grade A prime scoring chances tonight in that first period. I mean, the Sharks outshot Vegas. I believe the final number was, I want to say it was like 18-9. I'm just looking up NHL stats right now, but it was something crazy. They doubled them up on the shot counter. And I mean, the Sharks just came out flying. Al, what'd you take from that first period?
You know, overall, as you said, the Sharks outshot Vegas 2-1. But even if the Sharks
10-16, excuse me.
10-16. I think midway through the second, it was almost 2-1 though. If you don't capitalize on how many shots you put on the net, it doesn't honestly matter. I think shots are somewhat of an overrated stat. But I thought the Sharks came out pretty well. I thought they were aiming to get a 2-1 lead, hoping to get a 3-1 lead if they got both games today and on Wednesday. And I just thought it was a great overall effort. I think by losing tonight, though, it kind of puts more doubt on if Joe Thornton's going to start on Thursday or on game four.
All right. Well, I mean, that's pretty cool. Not pretty cool, but a pretty good take that you got there on that first period. Gentry, what did you think about the first period tonight? I mean, what did you just think about all the missed opportunities?
The missed opportunities, I mean, that didn't really tick me off, because I knew if we kept peppering Fleury, we would get our chances. You know, I thought the Sharks came out with a lot of speed and was just hamming it to Vegas. This was the start that I was hoping for in game one. You know, and we saw some of it in game two. This is the start. I was like, okay, this looks like now the rested team. And they were, and I was just like, okay, keep playing like this for, you know, 60 minutes and you, and this game is yours. And I had some optimism going into the second, but, you know, much like the Sharks, you know, do not forsake to hope. It, you know, do not trust to hope. It is forsaken in these lands.
Yeah, I mean, and just with that being said, we go into that second period. The Sharks score a power play goal. Timo Meier scores a goal that's eerily reminiscent to Logan Couture's overtime winner. Basically, it goes across the slot, catches Fleury, moving, shifting side to side, and the Sharks take a 1-0 1-0 lead. However, at 9 minutes, 40 seconds into the second period, Colin Miller scores and ties the game up also on the power play. And then next we have Vegas scoring another two goals. Jonathan Marchessault scores next, from Tuck and Smith on a power play. And then right after that, I mean, a minute and 26 seconds later, Riley Smith scores three. And the Sharks just look so deflated because, again, the Sharks outshoot Vegas 8-16 and really do double them up in that second period. That second period, I believe in the first half of it, really looked San Jose's. They looked like they were taking it to the Knights, and just really, pushing their style of play. And, you know, I think if anything we can take away from that is that the Sharks can dictate flow of game and can really dictate the way that the game is played. However, Vegas punched back, and I mean, they just kept that bend but don't break. I mean, they broke once, but they could have broken so many different times in that second period. And again, the Sharks not capitalizing on on the shots. And look, I mean, those were grade A scoring chances. I mean, they're not just gimmies from the point. I mean, these were things that were in close. I mean, Hurdle almost had a wraparound goal. We saw Kane with a similar type. I mean, Tierney was on the net. Gaudreau. I mean, honestly, top to bottom, the forward groupings for the Sharks looked really solid. The Gaudreau group looked like they got hung not hung out to dry, but got hemmed into their own zone a few different times. But it's to be, expected on a third line that doesn't have a natural center on it. Gaudreau's kind of a converted center. And what did you guys think about just overall the forward matchups tonight without Donskoy? I'm going to go ahead with starting with you, Gentry.
You know, I thought that the matchups tonight, I was kind of questioning why Tierney was on that top line with Vander Kane and Pavelski, but it was like, he was decent. He was providing them with enough chances and, winning some faceoffs. But it just seemed like without that speed and without that creativity of Donskoy, that line it really looked lost. The catalyst of that line is really a Vander Kane, but, because he kind of breaks the puck into the zone with his speed and is able just to kind of get behind the net and allow the other guys to kind of set up. It's just without that speed, or without that, that creativity from Donskoy, it just kind of seemed like everybody else kind of looked, lost and confused out there. But I wanted to say, like, on that first power play goal from the Sharks, the thing that I absolutely loved is the quick puck movement from side to side. You know, that's how you're going to get goals on Fleury, is moving the puck quickly, not holding on to it forever and hoping to God for a cross ice pass there, Kevin LeBanc. I'm looking at you. God, you hold on to that puck like forever and you think you're Joe Thornton, but unfortunately, Joe's just got a scotch more talent than you at passing the puck and threading the needle to open Sharks players.
Yeah, Al, I mean, what was your take on LeBanc tonight? I know that you had chimed in with a couple tweets saying he doesn't look very confident out there.
It seems like he's kind of reverting back to his old bad season habits where he doesn't shoot the puck at all. He's a great I think that he might be a great centerman just because of how often he passes. He has a great shot off also, but he just doesn't use it. And there were plenty of times when he was just so indecisive about what he wanted to do with the puck that it actually caused more turnovers. The Sharks were in more transition. And there's a lot of times where I didn't really blame the Sharks defensemen because they always had to be back feeding. I was kind of surprised also that instead of Tierney, I really did think that was going to be LeBanc, just because instead of making him, it would make him a little bit more aggressive to shoot the puck instead of passing it.
Right. I mean, and that's the thing too, is that power play only went 1-for-4 tonight. Vegas went 2-for-6 on the power play. the Sharks need to capitalize more than 25% on the power play if they have a chance to climb back into the series. And right now, Kevin LeBanc is just trigger shy. And that was the reason why late in the season or mid part of the season, he was taken off the power play by the coaching staff, because he just refused to shoot. And, you know, it worked for him in game two with that beautiful cross ice pass for the overtime winner. But you can't keep doing that. You have to be able to be more dynamic than a pass first player. We see Joe Thornton and the way that he's able to be cut off and to be defended. It's because he is a one-dimensional player, and it's not dynamic, and it's becoming stale. Gentry, I mean, what are your thoughts on maybe fixing up the power play by injecting a different player, a different kind of style? What do you think about that power play?
I think you take Kevin LeBanc off that first unit. That's first and foremost. He is a liability because he holds onto the puck for too long and he doesn't know what he wants to do with it. He's like a deer in headlights. He doesn't know. And if that cross ice pass isn't open or available to him, say goodbye, because then he'll take a weak shot selection, or he'll wait too long. Fleury will get set up back in his net and can see everything that's in front of him. I would also push for more net front presence in front of Fleury. I mean, I see Pavelski kind of doing that, but it's like Pavelski is like 5'11". You know, no one's going to be blocked by Pavelski all that much. You need a big body to get in front of Fleury to stop him from seeing those chances, you know, especially that first unit. They need to stop with, you know, the pretty passing plays. They either need to move the puck, shoot it, or honestly, choose your shot selections a little bit better, because there's like, it's either getting blocked and then sent right back out. You know, the second unit kind of had, you know, have better looks than the first units do, because they just move the puck around. They don't stay stagnant, which is what the first power play unit does. They just wait for the puck to come to them, and then they start moving around. You got to keep them on their toes.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll talk about that power play goal that was scored by the second unit, and it was doing exactly what Gentry was saying, where it's moving the goalie from side to side, really setting up that one timer on the point, and just, you know, rocketing past Fleury, and you know, the way that he's been playing, that's how you're going to have to score on him. Either that, or you're going to have to crash the net, which again goes to that net front presence. I mean, there's not going to be any cheapies. I mean, Al, what are you seeing from Fleury that's just making him so unstoppable? Is it the way his technique goes about doing things? Is it just the calm steadiness that he brings?
You know, I give Fleury a lot of credit. But I also want to give the Vegas Golden Knights defenseman a lot of credit, because they're clearing the net for him. There's not a lot of people screening the net. And I think that is a major reason why. You know, the Couture save in OT is one of the best saves I've seen in a while. A game-saving save that eventually set up Carlson's save later on. But I think just because the way the Golden Knights play, there's not a lot of players, and they're big. They have the size to take anyone out of the net. They are, I think, the perfect fit for how Fleury plays the net. I do think he's a little bit cheap sometimes. I thought what he did with Couture, squeezing up too close to him so he can get the goaltender interference call, I don't think he was trying to play the puck. I think he was trying to play the rule book. At least that's what it appeared to me. But for the most part, I think he would arguably be one of the most improved players if they gave that award out.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was definitely, I mean, if he did not go down to injury this year, he'd definitely be a Vezina candidate. I mean, he's already a Vezina candidate, and he was out, you know, almost half the year with injury.
Yeah.
Arguably team MVP on the Vegas Golden Knights, really keeping them in. I mean, Fleury is a good goaltender. I mean, and you don't go number one overall all the time for a goaltender. I mean, Rick DiPietro aside, I mean, that's few and far between. So to see, you know, Fleury, you know, just come out lights out. I mean, honestly, Vegas got a steal in the expansion draft as far as goaltending goes. And that's kind of something that I've been wrestling with these last few days, and just about how you look about how Vegas's fan base has been created. You look at how much hype there is. I went on Twitter tonight on a little bit of a rant, because it just seems like all of the media, and Canadian media is better because I've been watching the CBC feeds, but it's all of the media are attaching themselves to this narrative of the expansion franchise, of the little engine that could, whatever. But the thing that I want to, I mean, and I probably know the answer from both of you guys, but the thing that I want to talk about is, as an expansion franchise, you kind of have to go through a little bit of pain. I mean, that's part of the process of having an expansion franchise. And I mean, I know that the NHL wants to see their expansion franchises do well, and you can appreciate that, because especially it's in a Sun Belt city, and they want to kind of bring it up from the grassroots. However, I mean, to be given a team that's got this amount of weaponry and really just gotten way more, I think, handed to them than any other expansion team. I don't know about you guys, but it kind of leaves a sour taste in my mouth. Al, what's your take on that?
And I've been saying this for a while about the Golden Knights, that I think their first 9 or 10 games were at home. And then, not to connect this, but the shooting in October or November, I think it really did help build the atmosphere in Las Vegas for that team, made it more of a home atmosphere than more people were kind of giving credit towards when it was first kind of announced. And also, they got a great head coach. It was kind of an underrated thing for how what he's done with that team, building that team through the expansion draft and even through the NHL draft. But at the same time, I think there's still a lot of question marks with that team. Thomas Tatar is still kind of a question mark. I don't think necessarily that they've had a lot of stumbling blocks, and that's been one of my bigger question marks. In the playoffs, they've swept LA. It's still 2-1. I don't think people should panic because it's only 2-1. They've never really felt like there's never really been like a panic surrounding Las Vegas Golden Knights. And until that happens, I'm not too sure what type of environment hockey is in Las Vegas quite yet. This is the first time in all professional sports, not just hockey, that an expansion team has been this good.
Right. I mean, and you know the history of the Sharks as well as any one of us. I know that they paid $500 million for the expansion fee, right? So that does buy you a certain level of quality on the team. But if you look at the way that the Sharks were brought into the league, or you look in the way that the Senators were brought in the league, or the Lightning, do you think that it should have been this easy for them? Or do you think that it's a byproduct of just the league in general getting better? I mean, what's your thoughts?
In general, I think there's a lot of great talent that didn't have enough roster spots. And I think that's what happened with James Neal getting playing first or second lines a couple of nights. And I think overall, I think that's going to happen again when either Seattle or Houston shows up. I've been also in favor of a 34 team. So if they want to really do branch it out, really, really give the leagues a lot of talent to work with. I've always kind of thought there was almost not enough spots for all the players, just because of how global the league is compared to how, let's just say, leagues like NFL. NBA is not really an issue because, it's a global sport, but there's plenty of places where a pro athlete could go. So that's kind of like a bigger issue for hockey or National Hockey League, in my book.
Yeah. Gentry, I mean, you and I both know about the struggles of the team in the very early 90s and just how much tough sledding it was for us at the beginning. And to see a team to see a team come out so quick, I mean, there's certainly a level of bitterness I can feel from our fan base because of just how much they've gotten so quickly. What's your take on that? And do you think that that Vegas should have had such good access to such an amount of players?
Well, they kind of they use the advantage of, you know, going to other teams and scaring them. Well, we're going to take this player unless you give us this. You know, I think that now when Seattle comes in, most of the league will be wise to that. The thing that really kind of, you know, thing that for Vegas, to them, it's a Cinderella story because especially with the tragedy that happened towards the beginning of the season and how they and how they rallied behind them and how the city rallied behind them. So that was the first part. And then the team actually was playing really well. And then they kept playing really well. And then, you know, then you're like, oh, Fleury's out. Here comes, you know, Malcolm Subban. Oh, Malcolm Subban's out. Here comes a third, you know, string goalie. And it just, everything seemed to fall into their lap of, you know, luck, puck luck, hockey gods, whoever you believe in terms of hockey religion. It fell in. It fell into their lap, and then they just kept playing well. You know, they played a good team style of game, and you can't look. I mean, the Jack Adam Award's gonna clearly go to, you know, Jared Gallant. You know, it's pretty much got his name, you know, wrapped on it with a pretty little bow. It's just, but the thing that does irk me, which is how you put it, is that nobody had access to a two-time or three-time Stanley Cup winning goaltender, you know, in the expansion draft. Those guys were protected, you know, and a bunch of the guys, it's just like, you know, either George McPhee has one hell of a scouting crew because he was able to pick diamonds out of the rough. I mean, but let's keep in mind, this is also the GM who traded Martin Erath for Phil Forsberg. Right. So I don't know if he learned since then and, you know, was able to capitalize and was just able to move past it and just say, hey, we're going to build this team really good from the ground up, but give it to them. But they built a speed game, a good team defensive structure, and look where they are now. They're leading 2-1 in the series against a veteran, been there, done that Sharks team that, you know, and look who looked to be the more prime team, to look to the polished team, is your expansion first year team, other than and then over the Sharks that looked really lost by taking dumb penalties, and it cost them because the Sharks should have had this game.
But isn't this NHL learning from, I would say, the Arizona disaster that it's been for decades?
Right. And that's the thing where, I mean, that's where my confliction comes in, because you do want to have a strong league. You do want to create a grassroots fan base. It's just, how do you toe that line between what's fair for all the other expansion teams that came into this league? I mean, look at the 67 expansion team and look at how bad the West was for so long with that expansion. Look at the 90s sets of expansion. Look at the Columbus Blue Jackets and how bad they had it for a long time. I mean, so you know, to just get out of the gate so quickly and so efficiently, I mean, they had some really big scores. They had a really awesome draft. I mean, I cannot you know, just commend that staff for picking the way that they did in the draft, in the expansion draft as well, for that matter. So, it was just a confluence of a lot of things that came together. But, you know, I do wonder about the rules and the way that will be put into place for Seattle and other future expansion teams. And, you know,
I do think this will even out, though. There will be a time where Vegas eventually goes 3 or 4 years where they don't make the playoffs and tank. And then we start to wonder if they're actually good for the league.
Right.
And I actually do prefer this method of actually promoting the league with a new team, new commodity. It gives it a new storyline, but I hope they don't try to do it every 4 years, like they're trying to do with Seattle and Houston
And that's going to be the real big issue, I think, and you're bringing up a great point, Al, is just Seattle and the fact that it's coming on the heels of a potential lockout. And, you know, we've seen the amount of money that got handed over in expansion right fees that goes directly into hockey-related revenue. So yeah, that definitely gets split out to the rest of the team. So you could say that the teams gave up a player for, I think it was something like $30 million each team or $16 million, something each team got. But still, you know, we talk about it, but, you know, it's going to be interesting that the way that those rules will shift or will even evolve because of the expanding the lockout and just how that will affect the team. But going back now, I think we kind of had a little bit of a detour, but going back into that third period, Evander Kane comes out with a goal. A really nice snipe and a really good job by Logan Couture to be right in front of the goaltender. Fleury goes out and makes the initial contact on Couture, then resets. Couture lines up on the edge of the blue paint. Mind you, his body, most of his body is on the line, I would say ventured a little bit into that blue paint, and his skates were forward of the red line of the beginning of the blue paint. So what'd you see on that second goal, guys? Did you think it should have counted? And do you think that's the kind of way that they're going to have to score goals on Fleury? Why don't we go ahead and start with you, Judger?
It wasn't goaltender interference. Anybody who says it was goaltender interference, look up the rules, because Couture did not touch him in any way. It was Fleury leaning into Couture that made him so off balance and made, you know, that easy snipe for Evander Kane. You know, maybe if this was another, you know, series and stuff like that, because obviously, you know, my issues with goaltender interference, you know, because it's so unclear, you know, what is exactly goaltender interference. But my thing is that there was no initial contact. It was Fleury that made the initial contact on Couture. It was going to count regardless. And if they called it back, it would have been just, you know, it would have been a crap storm for, yeah. It's like, how are you going to explain that? And how are you going to spin that the next day? You know, we've already seen so many times that the Sharks have been screwed out of what should have been clear-cut goals because of supposedly goaltender interference. But I'm glad that they saw it that way. It was it wasn't any initial contact. It was Fleury who initiated it. So it was nice snipe by Evander Kane. Let's give him credit for that. And it was a nice screen by Logan.
Yeah. Al, what did you see on the goal? I know that you've also taken a look at this quite a few different times, and I know that you kind of side more in the goalies area. What did you think? And I,
for the most part, I don't think Fleury was playing the puck. I think he was trying to get the call. It looked very similar to the Martin Jones call in overtime, the first overtime in game one or game two, actually. And I thought he was trying to get a similar call because he was kind of tired on the play. He made two really good saves, but he just couldn't make it over to the far right post. And it looked like he just kind of made a desperate move to get a refereed call instead of actually making a play on the puck. And for the most part, I just think that when he committed to doing that, he basically made a 50-50 shot. It would have been 3-1 still instead of being 3-2 with 10 minutes to go. And I think a goalie can really make that choice if he feels like he can't make a shot like that. And give Kane a lot of credit. That is a really nice shot. Top right corner on the far right hash. That is a really great shot. I think that's one of the best shots he's done as a San Jose Shark.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and just to tie a bow on that one, I mean, it was called a good goal by Toronto. Basically all the information that we got was that it was the correct call on the ice. My guess is that once you start that initial, once Fleury made the initial contact, he kind of lost a little bit of his own, what's the best word? I guess not credibility, but a little bit of his own like protectiveness, because he did initiate that contact. So the league's like, okay, well, you're going to initiate that contact. You're going to lose a little bit of the protection that goalies are afforded because you did start that physicality. I think then when you get when you go into a marginal call like that where it really was 50-50. It could have gone either way. I could have seen the goaltender interference side because Logan's body was blocking him from moving to his right-hand side. Mind you, I mean, could he have really gotten to it? We would never know, but you know, I could see where that might come in. But I think that initial shove first is what was the deciding factor. So, I mean, as far as that goes, the goal counts, the Sharks, it's 3-2. Tomáš Hertl, I mean, just played an awesome game tonight. He really just poured his heart out and left everything he could on the ice. He did have a really bad penalty that led to the Marchessault goal. But in that third period, he was just a man determined to score. And he scores with basically a minute, 57 seconds left. It is a goal that is just one of those garbage time goals. I mean, he gets it in on Fleury. Fleury's trying to scramble to cover up the puck. It just squirts out the Hertl. Hertl puts it top shelf and well, not really top shelf, but kind of maneuvers around Fleury and gets the game tying goal. And we head off to overtime. And at this point, I mean, the Sharks looked decent. They looked like they got some of that momentum back and going into that overtime period. You know, I think that they felt like, okay, they're able to weather the storms that Vegas is putting back on. And, you know, it's just a really evenly played game. But in that overtime, the Sharks take two penalties. And one's for a delay of game, and the other is for
slashing, I think it was.
Slashing or interference or something like that. But the Sharks looked on their heels, and after basically killing off most of that time, I would say about the 15-minute mark of overtime, the Sharks really looked like they were starting to get their footing. I mean, there was a very
too many men.
Thanks, guys.
Kevin LeBanc can get off the freaking ice early.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and Kevin did not have a good game tonight. I mean, we've pissed on him quite a bit, and deservedly so. But the Sharks really looked like they were going to take it to him and almost scored. I mean, Logan was an inch from scoring, but Fleury comes out and just makes a beautiful save.
Yeah, that was the game changer right there, is because that was what tied the game up in game two. It was that same play. It was, you know, Couture coming into the slot, and it was a feed from behind the net. And now everybody thought, oh, that's going in. But Fleury made that save, and then we just, you know, we had them in the offensive zone, and we were like, okay, you know, we were having the momentum. And then this little catastrophe of a defenseman called Paul Martin decided to make his presence known.
Yeah, and we'll get to the overtime goal, I guess, now. So kind of a little bit of a broken play. The Sharks are using the boards to funnel the puck up. Brent Burns tries to push the puck up. It kind of gets lodged in the boards. William Karlsson ends up coming out with the puck. And basically, after that, he tries to switch off with Brent Burns and basically puts his back to the play. He inevitably doesn't cover the pass, and Brent Burns can't come back quick enough to cover the shot. And it goes stick side, far left corner, lasered into the back of the net, right below the crossbar by William Karlsson, who scores it in overtime, and Vegas wins. Now, the big, I would say, the biggest controversy or biggest, I think, coaching decision controversy that we've been talking about in Sharks land is the play of Paul Martin and how much ice time he's been given in the last three games. And Puck Guy just joined, so I want to throw it to you, Puck Guy, on your thoughts on Paul Martin, his ice time distribution, and the way he's been used.
It's interesting just because you have Burns has been doing pretty much everything. So you kind of have him do those like shift afters. And I don't know if you guys have seen it, where the shift after is kind of like a hodgepodge of players that aren't on like the PK or the power play units, kind of like to, okay, here's one extra unit. Now we can get back into our form as such. He did 15:35 tonight. He did 47 seconds of shorthanded time. I thought he was okay, but I thought, you know, position wise, he has to be great in order to do his thing.
He literally cannot mess up with his lack of foot speed. Al, I mean, you've talked about this too. What is it about Paul Martin getting into this lineup, and why does he continue to get in the lineup?
I think it depends a lot on Joakim Ryan. I don't think it depends on playoff experience, because I think DeBoer has kind of learned that doesn't really work in the Stanley Cup Finals. I think what's just hurting Paul Martin is just the speed factor, and that's why no one really claimed him at waivers when we first sent him down. Paul Martin just can't handle speed in the NHL level anymore. But I think until Ryan is healthy, and that's the reason why I'm kind of curious why he isn't healthy and being suited up is the big question right now.
Yeah. And I mean, James, I don't think he's in the lineup because of a $5 million contract. I mean, Hasso Plattner has made no qualms about spending money and on buyouts. I mean, look at Adam Burrish. I think we'll also look at Martin Havlat. I mean, he spent money to get rid of players, so I don't really think that that's so much of an issue. I think that this is a pure Peter DeBoer call. And I think it has to do with playoff experience and not trusting Joakim Ryan. I don't think it has to do with injuries anymore. What's your thoughts, Gentry?
I think this is, you know, it's clearly a coaching decision to keep Paul Martin in the lineup, you know. And somebody that really has to kind of tell PDB, Paul Martin is a defensive liability. And we only have room for one of those on the Sharks defensive, and that's Brent Burns. But he scores goals and makes up for it. I mean, who's going to have to get fired on this coaching squad to get rid of Paul Martin off of this lineup? Like, who? Like, please tell me it's Steve Spott, because I'd love to see him go.
Power play such, but yeah, I get your point.
So we're almost approaching 75 congruent viewers. If you have not already, please subscribe. I think there's a button over there. We did see the Vegas Golden Knight coverage. I've watched your videos. You're pretty funny. I just love the way that you have your hot takes on your own fans, on the team, and just the passion that you show. So awesome, awesome channel. I mean, if you guys want a good laugh, and he's actually pretty neutral for a Knights fan. That's just pretty awesome to see. So if you guys haven't already checked out his stuff, it's pretty good. It's pretty funny, and I definitely got a laugh out of it. I mean, for everybody else, I mean, we do these shows after every Sharks game. We do pre-draft coverage. We do free agent signing day. I mean, it's just a bunch of guys that really love hockey. The Bay Area is not really known for covering the Sharks all that well, and hockey in general. So we try and put this together. We've got some other properties as well. We've got Barracuda After Dark. So if you're into AHL hockey, you know, I do a little bit of a prospects preview kind of thing. So if you're into future Sharkies, you know, come on out and watch that. And then of course, TealTownUSA.com, just a great resource for any fan to really kind of get their information about the Sharks, kind of get some editorials, kind of get some behind the scenes stuff too. We've had some really great interviews with operations VPs from the Sharks themselves. We've had some really great interviews with alumni. We've had just awesome interviews with, you know, just throughout the organization, top to bottom. And you know, we try and reach out to fans of other teams, other podcasters. It's just a really, really great resource for anybody looking for hockey coverage. And you know what? I mean, California Sharks, I mean, just West Coast hockey in general just doesn't get the love. I mean, unless you're in Vancouver or Edmonton or Calgary, right? So
we all know the Seattle team's going to get more of coverage than the Vancouver Canucks and Vancouver.
Did somebody say Vancouver?
Yes, somebody did say Vancouver.
There it is.
So All right, so we break down the goal, and we break down that the Knights beat the Sharks in overtime 4-3. We've talked a little bit about Paul Martin. All right, guys. So the Sharks now can do a best split in San Jose.
One damn person said that.
Oh shit!
Uh oh!
Uh oh! one of the daddies is home. Oh,
somebody
no.
Somebody said Bloody Mary.
Somebody said Miami or something.
Yeah. So I mean, let's talk about potential lineup changes, and let's talk about where the momentum lies right now. I mean, some people say that there's momentum game to game. Most of the players will say that it's not really a thing, but I think that especially overtime winners is definitely a momentum changer and shifter. The Sharks played well. I mean, utterly just dominated on hits, you know, blocks, shots on goal. They had the puck more and they hit more. And honestly, they played an awesome game tonight, but just kind of came up short. Where are your guys feeling on the series so far? And what do you want to see in game four as far as lineup changes go? Puck guy, let's start with you.
With me, they were resilient, which is something that this team hasn't been in the past, where it's been you get down 3-1 and the life was sucked out of the building tonight after two periods. You could just really feel it after Vegas scored the three goals to give them the lead in the second. But in that transparent time, you have that resiliency that we've seen it. Like Timo, it was Timo time in Anaheim. You had all those times where the Sharks came back, even like thinking they're like down 3-0 to Winnipeg and Tierney had tied it on the power play. You have stuff like that. So you really saw the resiliency tonight. So while you did lose this game, you're down 2-1 in the series. I mean, as much as we wish that this series was going to be going 3-1 Sharks going back to Vegas, realistically, I wasn't expecting it. And with how they're playing right now, I think the Sharks still have some confidence. I'm glad game four is back in San Jose on Wednesday night. And I think as long as they get those mental mistakes out of the way, like the puck over glass, I mean, we had two of them tonight, Bodker and here's the funny thing. Here's the funny thing, though. I don't know if it was picked up on the broadcast, but the referee called 36 San Jose 2 minutes.
Right, yeah, we
don't have. I was like,
when did Hanson?
I was like, sweet. I didn't know we had an extra roster player playing tonight that we can put in the penalty box. But you know, as long as we get rid of those mental mistakes and we focus on trying to get the smart move, and like you guys said earlier, the not waiting on it. And I kind of touched that on after game two. It's like not waiting on making a pass or making the shot, just do it. And I think if you're able to just keep going at that pace, it makes for a faster game for the Sharks, and the Sharks should come out on top. Sorry for the rambling, but
that's good. What about personnel changes? I mean, we've talked about Thornton and we've talked about Martin. I mean, what do you see out of those two guys? Do you swap in somebody? Or do you keep it the same?
Oh, me?
Yes.
I would think with Donskoy, if you can get Donskoy back in, I think it would be key. I think he's worked pretty well on that top unit with Kane and Pavelski. That, you know, I think it could also be beneficial to have Donskoy on the power play unit and replace LeBanc, because I think LeBanc is just, you know, is either too pass happy or just is not 100% confident.
And I'm sorry, LeBanc. We only have room on the roster for one pass happy vote, and we pay him $8 million this season. Right. So.
But in that sense, I could get why they have him out on the top unit, Gent, because he has that Joe Thornton-esque line thinking. I mean, thinking he's not as good as Jumbo, obviously, not yet.
No, least. He only knows how to do one thing, and that's cross-ice passes.
Which is, you know, game two view, of course. But, I mean, that's where you can maybe change the power play up a little bit and just try to.
Well, how did you know, my thought process is this. How did you score your 3-2 goal and the game-tying goal? net front presence.
Yep.
You screened him.
Bam.
You were scrambling in front of the net and you happened to get a lucky bounce. But you know what? That's what happens when you go to the net. And in terms of lineup changes that you can do, you know what? Slide, you know what I would love to see, and maybe this is going to be a hot takery, but put in Graham Bell on that top line with Pavelski and Evander Kane. You have him in your lineup. Use him.
Who?
And I think
Dylan Gambro.
Yeah.
Oh, Gambro.
Yeah, put him in the lineup. You know, put him as the top center because he's, you know, he's got some speed to him, you know, and then that can put Tierney back with his line mates, you know, on the third line, and it evens out the distribution of everything. You know, yeah. At this point, what do you have to lose? You know,
yeah. That's an awesome takeaway. I mean, Gambrell is big. He's got a lot of speed, like you said. I think that's not actually really a hot take. I think it's just trying to call in a black ace. Al, what are your thoughts on adjustments and personnel moves?
You know, it would be interesting to see if they continue to play at this slow pace, trying to body up against the Golden Knights. I think the current pattern is to play fast, not go up against that and see what happens. Early in the second period, that didn't really work. But I think it is time to see what happens, to try to change the game plan. I'm in favor of playing Hansen.
Yeah, I was too.
I know
over LeBanc.
Yeah, after tonight, yeah, but maybe not.
Hell, I'll put a puck guy over LeBanc any day of the week.
Thank you very much. I will be that big button in getting Fleury's way. I'll make sure I have extra burritos for that matter too.
If Donskoy's injury is lower body, I don't expect him to come back in this series. That's a three or four day injury. But it's the playoffs. Players play on torn ACLs. We've heard crazy stories, but I just don't expect him to come back too soon.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, at least, kind of going in and around it, I think you guys are absolutely right. I think it's time for LeBanc to sit a game. I'd love to see Gambrell would be kind of nice to see in there. And yes, he can play. He can play in the playoffs. He does have a contract that allows him to do that. I'm trying to remember if we burned the year off the ELC or not. And I don't remember. I don't remember if it's games played or games he could play. But anyhow, it doesn't really matter. But yeah, he can play in the playoffs. For me, it really is going back to putting Joakim Ryan with Brent Burns. Paul Martin, I mean, he's just been so steady. He was steady in the Ducks series. I mean, and really where a veteran presence was really good to see and really helpful. I just don't know that we're going to see it because Peter DeBoer is so, so very stubborn. And when he sees Brent Burns making goals and doing his Wookiee-like things, and he sees who's next to him, he sees that number seven, I think for all intents and purposes, that's a security blanket there.
But you know what? If you're going to be set in your stubborn ways, let me tell you about another coach in the last playoff series
who was
set in stubborn ways. His name was Mike Babcock.
Oh, I was thinking T-Mac.
No. Oh, no. It was Babcock. You know, you're not going to have your franchise center out on your first power play unit, start off the power play, you know, or go be out there when the extra man is needed. You know, to me, that's, you know, it's like, oh, I favor the guys who want it more. It's like, but Matthews is one of your best players in an offensive threat, and you're not going to put him out there. It's kind of like PDB. Well, I like the veteran steadiness that Paul Martin brings. Well, we saw that steadiness. He made two dumb mistakes that led to two goals, one of them leading to the game winner in OT. So time for that stubbornness and need to have the willingness to kind of sit there and go, well, obviously he's a problem. Let's address it.
Yeah, yep. And I, you know, another thing going off of that too, and just about addressing things, Hurdle and Meyer have played really well together. I have really liked their shifts together and how both of those two are wrecking balls. And I'd love to see them on a line with Logan or with them on a line in Evander and really just go and just, you know, be the three cannonball line, a cannonball line. You know, I mean, I love the way that those three have been playing, and arguably the best Sharks that have been playing in this series so far, Logan as well. You know, it might be interesting to put them and load up a line. Again, I just want to say thank you for everybody that's come out and is watching the show right now. We peaked at about 74 viewers, so I really appreciate it.
And sorry to interrupt, Landy. I just want to say thank you to the people who have subscribed. We've now officially gone over 750 subscribers.
Yeah, new subscriber from 4 minutes ago, Colleen. Thank you so much. Semich, Little Techno, Edward Phillip, Milhouse Van Hooten, Lava Burst, M Thirsty, Izzy the Dude, Daniel Martinez.
You guys, somebody broke into my house and took over my office.
Paranormal activity.
Michael Hogstrom, thank you all so much for subscribing. And really, I mean, it's just awesome. You know, this thing is just keep getting better and better. So going into game four, what are your guys' predictions for the game? Do we see this with Vegas having the chance to end it at home, or do we see that this thing is all tied up back going back to Vegas? And not only that, but where can we find you guys? Al?
You can find me at Twitter at Al Martinet. You know, I think the Sharks have had a really good season, but I think it's going to go up 3-1 for the Vegas Golden Knights. I don't think Pulmar has been that bad. I think it's been more of a compliment or a criticism of Brent Burns. He's been really inconsistent this series. Game one was his worst. Game two, he was a star, but we're going to need him for 7 games, and I think he's just been too far inconsistent. And the Sharks' depth is just kind of depleting at the worst possible time. So I have the Sharks being down 3-1 heading into Vegas for game five.
Buckeye, where can the people find you, and what's your take on game four?
Game four, I think people just need to keep at Getting Loud. That place tonight was just electric, especially when the Sharks were scoring or had any good chances, especially on the penalty kill in overtime as well. Bring the noise, bring the heat. I think you just need to make sure you are mentally okay with how you play your game. No extra, you know, LeBanc, you know, jumps on the ice in overtime. Can't have that. You mean make sure that you're clearing the pucks off the glass and into the stands, not just clearly over. Little things like that, and this might be a different turnout. And also, let's throw Sorensen on the power play. What do you? I mean, might as well try it. Why not? For me, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at PuckGuy14. I will be down at the street rally on Wednesday, so check us out. Just come say hi. I think I still have some Teal Town USA magnets. Let's see if I can get right here. Yeah, I think I still have some of these guys. There you go. So come and say hi. Of course, I'll give you two, one for you to keep and one for you to give to a friend or a colleague so you can get the word out. So thank you for your support, and thanks for having me on, guys. Back to you, Landy.
Gentry, where can the people find you, and what's going to be your take for game four?
You can find me on Twitter at jalexander46. Same thing on Instagram. My take on game four, the Sharks going to keep playing like they did tonight. It's going to be another blowout, and then it's going to be another blowout in Vegas. So you better come with your heads into the game and work on the fine details. And please, for the love of God, PDB, do not play Paul Martin.
For me, I mean, you can use my first name, Eric, and my last name, Landy, on all of the social media garbages, and you can find me.
Spelled the right way, by the way.
Yes, yeah, spelled the right way with a K and an L-A-N-D-I. As far as what we're going to see game four, I think it's going to be pretty similar to that Boston-Tampa Bay game today, which they tied their series 1-1. And I think we're going to have a tie series going into Vegas. And I know a lot of people don't want to hear this, but this thing is going 7. It's just gotten that written all over because it's one team counterpunching and the other team punching. And it's going to go like that, and it's going to go down to Vegas, game seven, and it would not surprise me if we have double overtime, game seven. You know, mark my words, I think that that's what's going to happen. And, you know, I think from there it's just kind of a coin flip, to be, you know, to be quite honest. We're not really doing a reach around tonight. It's kind of a mini reach. Landy Stewart.
4-2 Lightning over the Boston Bruins, series tied 1-1. Back to
you. There you go. There's your quick reach around. Have at it.
Yes.
this is your porn gif in 15 seconds.
Yeah. No Hung Do. Thank you for subscribing as well. I appreciate it. Vegas tonight's coverage. No more goalie interference calls, though, please. Yeah, I think we could do without the goalie interference calls for the rest of this series.
I want like three more against you. Just put that out there.
Oh my god, yeah, like another another one in double overtime. But yeah, I mean, for everybody who hasn't really caught up, please check us out on TealTownUSA.com. You can find the rewind there. You can also find all the other content that we have. We've got Pucknologist coming out, I think, sometime in the middle of the week. Of course, we'll also have some great editorial stuff coming out on the website. We've got some other interviews and stuff that we've got in the pipeline. So we've got some really, really great content, if you would not mind checking that out. And for everybody, we really appreciate you tuning in. We'll see you after game four. Have a great night, everybody.